Some say we're on the verge of a great awakening. Others claim the powerful Puppet Master's multifaceted stranglehold is stronger than ever. And on the Higher Side Chats, we explore the conspiracies, the mysterious, the alternative, and the occult, on a quest that rests firmly on the fringe, which won't be sponsored by Audible or Stamps.com, nor picked up by the gatekeepers of conventional media or radio. It's a quest of the people. So if you enjoyed this first free hour of THC, consider sponsoring the journey yourself by subscribing at thehiresidechatsplus.com. Just $5 a month gets you a second hour with all our great guests on each of our month's five shows. You can also make your own topic and guest suggestions right on your THC Plus profile, communicate with Greg Carlwood, and have your own custom RSS feed URL to use and still listen on the majority of popular podcast applications. You can also support the show with a donation into the THC Money Bomb, where on the last show of every month, we give half of the total donations back to one of the random listeners like you who could use a nice surprise in these troubled times. And lastly, to support THC in a free and equally important way, share the show with your friends, review us where you can, and join us in the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, and our subreddit forum, where THC fans and the cerebral adventurers of the counterculture have taken refuge and discuss the finer points of our never-ending struggle to tip the scales in favor of truth, peace, and enlightenment in a war-torn, corrupt, and shady world. Let the games begin.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Higher Side Chats.
Oh my God, Higher Side Chatters, how the hell are you? Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke from San Diego, I'm Greg Carlwood, and we hear these stories of extraterrestrials. We know about the Greys, the Reptilians, the Mantids, the feline entities of the Sirian star system, the Pleiadians of the fifth density, the Anunnaki engineers of humanity, the Archon parasites that feed on the psyche of the unsuspecting, and the whole Pandora's box of beings from the great beyond. It's a lot to keep track of, guys, but luckily today's guest, Alfred Lambermont Weber, the man behind the hugely popular website exopolitics.com, has done the dirty work of combing through archives and databases and testimonies and compiled a real wicked, all-encompassing Rolodex of otherworldly entities. And a lot more than just that in his new book, The Dimensional Ecology of the Omniverse, which really aims to identify and define all the vast aspects of this reality, various dimensions, densities, the spirit realm, synthetic quantum environments, everything. Everything that we've heard about or know about, and examining the depth of that content and all the weirdness that comes with it is what we're doing on today's show. But I also got another Higher Side Chats themed track from a listener who goes by the name Glasgow Kiwi. You can find him on SoundCloud there. And it takes a bit of work to put music out, so when someone records something about THC, that's pretty awesome. And the art people have sent me, the graphics, also awesome. I'm still in awe of the Facebook cover photo I got from one of you out there. Man, thanks again. Anything you folks might be inspired to make, send out to thehiresidechats@gmail.com. And if you have any interesting UFO sightings, cryptid encounters, or police brutality stories, anything interesting, please go to thehiresidechats.com and use the voicemail button to leave me a message to play on the show. A lot of people have, but they generally just shower me and the show with praise, and I appreciate it so much, but I cannot play a bunch of clips of people giving me compliments. I'll look like an asshole. So give me your interesting tales of weirdness or corruption or inspiration, if you'd be so kind. But I'm getting distracted, so let's do the damn thing. Here is a quick track from a listener you can find on SoundCloud under Glasgow Kiwi with a THC track to get the ball rolling, and then you all better be ready to get weird with the man of the hour, or two if you signed up for Plus, Alfred Weber, on the other side.
Here's a chance to run down the rabbit hole. He's asking who is really running the show. Pull back the curtain and take a peek. Puppet masters play hide and seek. Not a soul. sunny walk to there and back. Greg likes it weird on the higher side, chats. Buy a ticket, take the ride, sit yourself down by the higher side. Buy a ticket, take the ride, sit yourself down by the higher side. Buy a ticket, take the ride, sit yourself down by the higher side.
Folks, we know we live in a weird world in an even stranger universe, and that's only part of an even weirder multiverse inside the freakiest omniverse you've ever laid your eyes on. Life is a crazy thing, and the mainstream is only comfortable unraveling the first few layers of this vast system, but today we're going to dive deep into the real nitty-gritty of what life is, what death is, the exophenotypology of the beings within, quantum access, consciousness, and the kitchen sink with one of the leading experts in this subject. His name is Alfred Lambermont Weber, graduate of Yale University and Yale Law School, and was a futurist at the Stanford Research Institute, where he directed the proposed 1977 Carter White House Extraterrestrial Communication Study, and was an NGO delegate to the United Nations and the Unispace Conference. He's been on every network under the sun, exposing international war crime racketeering, HARP, chemtrails, mind control, and the extraterrestrial situation. He's the man behind exopolitics.com, and his latest book is called The Dimensional Ecology of the Omniverse, and I'm psyched to have him here. Alfred, welcome to THC. How are you?
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here, especially to be talking about the dimensional ecology.
Yeah, it's a real interesting subject, and this is a serious pleasure. You've got a really long list of impressive credentials, and it's great to see someone with such a prestigious background examining not only the stranger aspects of our reality, consciousness, and the ET presence, but also like the secret programs and dark agendas of the global elite. And even though these things are getting harder to deny, a lot of the leading scientists and scholars are still unwilling to explore them. But I mean, being on the front lines yourself, do you see that tide turning at all?
Well, yes. And there's a scientific reason for it that grows out of the dimensional ecology itself. And that is what we call the positive timeline and the positive future. And people can go to a website that we've set up for this purpose called positivefuture.info. And there's an equation that we've developed called positive future equals positive timeline plus unity consciousness. And that's an actual equation that there is plenty of empirical data that supports that equation, all sides of it. And basically, what we discovered was that after December 21st, 2012, the timeline, basically the time-space hologram that we're in now, that is, we earthling humans are in, is composed of multiple timelines. And as of December 21st, 2012, some people say it was in October 2011, we shifted onto a positive timeline. It kind of was going there for a while. And we shifted off of what had been foreseen as a catastrophic timeline. There were several predictions, and we can get into those if you want, of catastrophes on Earth, things like global coastal events, which are tsunamis hitting all of the coast, destroying all of the coastal cities. It's like the KT event that knocked out all of the dinosaurs 65 million years ago. Well, that didn't happen because we shifted timelines. And so all of a sudden, these things that hermeneuticists, which are decoders of prophecy, said, oh, this is going to happen in 2013. And there were various remote viewing studies and even time travel probes that said we're going to happen in 2013, didn't happen. They had happened in adjacent timelines or dimensions, but not in the one that we're on.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's because the interdimensional portal of the universe that we're in, we're in a multiverse that is composed of multiple universes, a humongous number of universes. And the interdimensional portal in our universe started broadcasting permanently waves of unity consciousness. And unity consciousness says we are one. It's not like duality consciousness, which is I win, you lose.
Right.
And that's how you create a positive future, is by being on a positive timeline and being able to tune into the unity consciousness that is there. So that's the story of why we're on a positive timeline.
That's interesting, man. Well, let me ask you, was this shift natural? Because I know obviously the date has been prophesized for some time, but we also hear that in these black budget projects, they're messing around with timelines also, or at least trying to. So what do you see as being the catalyst for this shift? Is it a natural cycle in the universe, or was this more of a man-made alteration?
Well, I think that there were a lot of, quote, men, that is, consciousnesses, which were embedded in and committed to duality consciousness, I win, you lose, whether they were, you know, working for money or they were working for the Matrix, part of the Illuminati, part of whatever faction, you know, banking, war faction, or they were working for one of the negative ET factions, or they were working for one of the diabolical factions, or they were just confused. And they may have been involved in promoting a negative timeline or in projects that are still trying to promote the negative timeline, you know, using exotic weapons like HAARP to make us believe that, oh, we're on the edge of the end of the world, but it's all fakery.
Right. So, okay. So you think that it's media manipulation? Because I was going to say, if we were on a positive timeline, I would hope that it would be a lot more positive than the reality we have. There's still a lot of suffering to go around.
Yes, but it's all manipulated. That is, all of the, quote, wars that we're in are actually false flags.
Mm-hmm.
War is industrial activity. It's like making shoes. And the people who are in the war industry actually do so to make money, and they do it by controlling both ends of the war. That is, they control all parties in the war, either by funding all parties or by arming them or by manipulating them. And that's how they control the money, by arming them, by getting the territories. Even the so-called Cold War between Russia and the U.S. was a sham, because Russia and the U.S. used to meet once a year under the North Pole in a submarine to plan out the next year. It was like controlling market share.
Mm-hmm.
How many ICBMs are you going to build, da-da-da, so that the charade can go on?
Yeah, and to make it even weirder, the reality we're in itself seems to be just holographic. So that's another layer of, is it even real?
Yeah. And the entire time-space hologram that we're in is actually an intelligently constructed reality. It's like we're in a super carnival ride. We're like in an E-ride at a cosmic Disneyland. And we, our souls incarnate into it. And actually, our souls are holographic fragments of Source, of God. And that's one of the scientific discoveries that we've explained in the dimensional ecology of the omniverse. Now, what's true is that the fundamental property of a hologram is that the whole is contained in each part of the whole, so that our souls, which are holographic fragments of God, thus are God. So each of us is God in a very real sense. And as we discovered in exploring the different parts of the dimensional ecology, the intelligent civilization of souls, actually all collectively participate in building the universe that we're in and all of the universes that we know as the multiverse. That's how, what we spend most of our time doing, is building and creating the multiverse as part of God.
Wow, man. Well, you're right. It does seem like folks in the forefront of science today are confirming a lot of the ideas that spiritual gurus of the East have been saying for centuries. And it's fascinating to see that happening. But this new model of the omniverse, to reiterate your equation, I believe it's the multiverse plus the non-physical spiritual dimension consisting of the civilization of souls plus source itself, right? That is the structure of everything that is the way you see it, correct?
Yes, this is an equation that we came to, and part of the original science that is developed in the book around a new concept, a new scientific concept called the omniverse that we are bringing forward. Right now, the canon of science, modern canonical science, the farthest that it will go is the multiverse, which novelist William James and philosopher, psychologist developed in the latter part of the 19th century. And the definition of the multiverse is the totality of the universes of space, time, energy, and matter. And that is as far as modern canonical science will go. They do not recognize anything that is beyond time, space, energy, and matter, such that modern canonical science will not recognize the scientific validity of the human afterlife, of the intelligent civilization of souls, of spiritual beings, or of God, because modern science considers that those cannot be proven scientifically, and therefore those concepts are matters of faith and belief and not scientific issues. And what we demonstrated in the Dimensional Ecology of the Omniverse was just the opposite, and that using replicable scientific evidence, using the scientific method of standard protocols and replicable results, we can prove the existence of the intelligent civilization of souls, of the dimension of the afterlife, of the spiritual beings of God, and even of the formula of the omniverse. And the dimensional ecology equations are: the omniverse equals the multiverse plus the spiritual dimensions. Now, that's a formula that has never been stated before. And basically, the multiverse equals all the universes of space, time, energy, and matter. That's as far as string theory and, you know, bubble universe theory and as a modern science will go. And that's all that can be taught under the modern canon of science. And that's all that can be taught at universities. And I say that because I presented a curriculum to university departments here in British Columbia at the head of department level. And they said, Alfred, you're 10 years ahead of your time. And I could see that all I was looking at was their fears, not the scientific validity of their decisions. And in fact, under this formula, spiritual dimensions equals the intelligent civilization of souls plus the spiritual beings plus source or God. So again, the omniverse equals the multiverse plus the spiritual dimensions. And once we understand that the afterlife is an energy dimension on the same order as the space-time hologram that we live in, except that we were involved in creating the multiverse, then it becomes very easy to understand this.
Yeah, man, that's pretty impressive. And you're so right, because some of these cutting-edge scientific experiments are confirming the idea of a life for consciousness outside of the body or a concept of a spiritual plane, but they don't have a model to turn to that includes those new areas. And that's sort of what you've done for them in this book. But one aspect that's hazy for me, and I was really anxious to ask you about this, and that's travel between parallel realities and the spiritual dimension, because we hear that extraterrestrial intelligences and black ops military projects are able to jump dimensions and access other timelines. but can they also access the spiritual dimension as well? That seems a little bit weird for me because it's non-physical. I guess a better question would be, is there a different method of travel to go from a physical reality to a non-physical plane, or jumping from one physical 3D reality to another, or do we even know?
That's a key question, and that was one of the questions that I really had to examine when I started writing this book, which was, I was doing a book tour, my first book, Exopolitics, in Spain in 2009 as part of the European Exopolitics Summit. And I was being interviewed by this Spanish journalist in Barcelona for the second largest newspaper in Spain for its kind of back page feature. And the interviewer, Ima Sanchez, asked me a very profound question. She said, "Alfred, tell me how the universe works. What's the relation between extraterrestrials and reincarnation?" Wow, I really got to work on that. And to answer a question, it took me 5 years, and this book was really the answer to her. And what I found in the course of my research is that two technologies are really common and key to the omniverse, both the spiritual dimensions and the what I call exopolitical dimensions, or the multiverse. And those are telepathy and teleportation, or time travel. Telepathy is non-local mind-to-mind communication, and teleportation is displacement between points in a single dimension, or between points among several dimensions along a single timeline. And time travel is displacement across several timelines. And what I found is that teleportation and telepathy are used by entities both in the universes of the multiverse and in the spiritual dimensions, in the afterlife and in the spiritual dimensions itself. For example, extraterrestrials are basically incarnated souls in some universe, on some planet or dimension of the multiverse. And extraterrestrials will use to get around in a universe or in the multiverse, they will use teleportation. So we have photographs of extraterrestrial craft creating their own wormholes and teleporting from one dimension into our 3D time-space dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And we have multiple reports of abductees or contactees being teleported up into hyperdimensional extraterrestrial spacecraft. And telepathy, we have multiple reports. Well, first of all, Professor J.B. Ryan at Duke University has studied, and in parapsychology, there's a whole study of how telepathy is a property of the earthling human mind. And if you go to contactee reports and abductee reports, telepathy is how extraterrestrials communicate with humans and among themselves. That's how advanced intelligence communicates in the universes of the multiverse. And likewise, say when a soul is getting ready to incarnate into a body in some universe or solar system or planet of the multiverse, say the data shows that the soul, when it's ready, will enter through the interdimensional portal between the afterlife and this particular universe, let's say if it's going to incarnate on Earth, and it will teleport right up to the time-space coordinates of the mother, right up next to the fetus in the womb, about 3 months prior to birth, and then it will integrate itself into the fetus. And 3 months later, it'll be born. And likewise, when the soul goes to leave the body upon bodily death, the soul will leave the body and then teleport toward the interdimensional portal, which in near-death experiences and in all of the contacts through near-death experiences or through mediumistic experiences or through hypnotic regressions of soul memories of the interlife, will leave through the interdimensional portal between our Earth time space hologram and the dimension of the afterlife or the interlife. So teleportation and time travel or telepathy are the common modality among the dimensional ecology within the universes of the multiverse and also between the universes of the multiverse and the dimensional ecology of the spiritual dimensions, which include the afterlife, the spiritual dimensions, and God. It's actually very simple. There's a lot of mystery that surrounds it, which has been actually injected there, whether on purpose or not, by mainly over the last 3,000 to 5,000 years by the human religions. And that's what this book really kind of discovered, because it went in and began to explore, well, what's the science behind all this? And we compared it to the quote text, quote, sacred text of the religions, what each believed about what happens after death and the soul and all of that. And various religions have been teaching a Tower of Babel that doesn't correspond to scientifically what actually happens at all. And that's why Earth is mired in this Tower of Babel confusion. It's mainly due to the religions. Mm-hmm. And a good deal as to why we have such a world of war, disease, crime, and poverty and ignorance can be laid at the feet of not only the religions and those who manipulate it, but to the elites who have, from behind the scenes, manipulated this ignorance, and those negative interdimensional forces who manipulate the dimensional ecology, such as to prey on this ignorance, in my humble opinion, of course.
Yeah, man, this is fascinating stuff. And another question about this. In the book, you say that time travel and teleportation can occur both through man-made portals, but also natural stargates. Can you give us an example or some background on natural stargates on the planet? Where have these occurred? Are these like physical locations?
Yes. And I can give you some examples. There's a colleague of mine named Jerry Wills. You may have heard of him. Mm-hmm. He is actually, and I've done a program with him. You can go to Exopolitics TV on this. And he's actually an extraterrestrial who was left here at birth. He's from the planet Tau Ceti, and or from the solar system Tau Ceti.
Wow.
And he was left here at birth as a project of the Council of Worlds. It's kind of a Superman story. And he leads expeditions and has been down to South America, and he has gone into portals where he is actually teleported inside the portals and has come out. So has actually experienced these portals. I have another colleague who's the head of UFODC, and his name is Wilbur Allen. And again, you can go to exopolitics.com and see a number of our interviews there. And he's extraordinary because he has had a career on Air Force One under a number of presidents. And now he's a photographer in Washington, D.C. And the extraterrestrials will direct him as to where they will be. So he will be at a particular spot so that he can photograph them as they come in to land in the protected airspace over the U.S. Capitol and the White House. And there are a whole number of his photographs. You can see them at exopolitics.com or at his website, ufodc.com. And so there was one photograph that he explained to me that he was photographing a gray extraterrestrial that was swimming in the reflecting pool down across from the Capitol. And at the same time, at the opposite end of the reflecting pool, a group of Mayans in classical garb, they were classical garb Mayans, landed and appeared at the end of the reflecting pool. And the Mayans, it was explained to me by a colleague, her name is Marisol. We spoke together at a conference in Mallorca, Spain, and she's a student of the Mayans. And what the Mayans did is that they bound their skulls in a way so that their third eye would be maximized. They constricted the bones of the skull. And that is because they practice natural time travel and teleportation through portals.
Wow.
And that's why they think, one of the theories, that the Mayans disappeared all of a sudden, this very advanced society, and that is that they teleported en masse to another dimension. You know, they didn't go there. They just teleported there through natural stargates. And so that one theory that Will Allen has for the fact that in this one photograph, he has a gray swimming in the swimming pool, and this group of Mayan elders in the classical garb, that is from 600 or 700 to 1,000 years ago, was that they had time traveled from their time space to our time space, that is the United States capital, one of the three nations, you know, city-state capitals of Rome, London, Washington, D.C., of the Western Empire, and had been there in that photograph at that moment. So that's an example of the natural stargates. And there are others who state that if you look at certain paintings and depictions, for example, of Jesus, that he's depicted in his resurrected state as actually using natural stargates for travel. And that he has sort of an expanded aura, you know, that's depicted behind him.
Right.
And that they're actually depicting a natural stargate at that point.
Wow, that is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So the Oxford University Press, they approached you to write a book that applied the principles of international law to extend out to include extraterrestrial contact. And I thought that was pretty noteworthy to have such scholarly, fundamental work done on a topic such as this. And coming from one of the mainstream universities, I can't help but wonder if this is groundwork for some type of disclosure. Do you get the vibe that this is eventually going to roll out in a mainstream way or not?
Well, I certainly hope so. And a lot of it came out from that initial contact with Oxford. And from there, I was able to develop what's called the dimension-based typology of extraterrestrial intelligent civilizations. Because in order to write the book, when I first sat down to write the book on extraterrestrials and the law, I said, well, first of all, we have to have a typology of extraterrestrial intelligent civilizations in the multiverse, because law and legal terms rely on precision in definition and location. If you're going to acquire jurisdiction over an entity, you have to be able to describe that entity. And if that entity is not in your reality, and if you have no power to have that entity in your reality, how can you talk about having jurisdiction over them?
Absolutely.
And so I looked around, and there was the Kardashev scale, which had been developed by a Russian scientist named Kardashev and had been popularized by Michio Kaku. And that was where you have, say, a zero type civilization. It was based on the type of energy that a civilization produces.
Right.
Whether they're using their own nest or whether they're using the power of the universe or whether they're dealing at a galactic level or at a universe level. Zero, one, two, three. And we, of course, are at a zero type universe trying to become a one type. And I didn't think that was quite adequate. And there was another typology, which is based on, is the intelligent civilization cooperating with the U.S. national security complex? And hey, the U.S. national security complex is just one nation on one planet in one solar system in one galaxy in one universe in which one German supercomputer simulation estimates that there are 500 billion galaxies in our universe alone. So I said, that's not very good. So I ended up saying, well, what do the extraterrestrials, what do the intelligent civilizations say about themselves? And they describe themselves as being dimension-based or density-based. In other words, that's the most fundamental way that intelligent civilizations self-describe themselves. They'll say, I'm Applied Ian from the fifth dimension, or I'm an Arcturian from the sixth density. Density has a little more nuance or connotation than dimension does. It means it's more about consciousness. And densities and dimensions are about discrete bands of consciousness energy. And so I came up with we were able to develop the dimension-based typology of intelligent civilizations in the multiverse that started with the time-space dimension solar system civilizations, of which Earth humanity is one. Earthling humans are one, we're one. And in our solar system, there's another time-space, third dimension, third density human civilization, as well as an insectoid, as well as an intelligent reptilian civilization. And that's on our nearest planetary neighbor, Mars.
Right. So, yeah, this is really what I wanted to get into, this eco-typology of all the different beings and intelligent civilizations that we know about so far. And like you mentioned, one might define themselves as a fifth dimensional Pleiadian. When someone describes themselves as something other than a third dimension or a fourth or fifth dimensional being, something higher, is that no longer a physical reality, or is that because that's, you know, would just be three dimensions? So is a fifth dimensional Pleiadian not necessarily from a physical plane?
Well, it would be a physical plane. It's just a different kind of matter. You know, here are principal dimension, aside from space, is time.
Right.
There in the fifth dimension, a principal dimension might be light.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah.
Or love.
Mm-hmm. Interesting to try to figure out what that would be like.
Yeah. So it's very difficult for our minds to completely comprehend that.
Right.
Because we are so used to time, space, and we are inside of a primate body. So we are living a primate reality in time, space. However, through meditation, one can start reaching into fourth dimensional and fifth dimensional realities, beginning to incorporate more of their concepts into our reality. And we know that we're going through what's called a planetary ascension at this time, or that is, not everyone that we share our time-space hologram with is at third dimension or third density. You know, some will be at 3.2, others will be at 3.5, others will be at 3.8.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're all have a discrete energy signature, and we're all at a slightly different place along a consciousness evolutionary scale. And the purpose of this time-space hologram is actually soul development, to aid in our soul evolution. So some of us are at a certain way along in soul development, other further down, but this machine puts us all kind of in the same chamber, although we're not. It looks like we're sharing the same planet, but we're actually not in some ways. There's a lot of what's called stratification going on.
Interesting. Like it's a way more positive experience for some people who have a way more positive viewpoint of it, and some other people view this planet as almost a physical hell. They're going through life hating every moment. Is that kind of what we're talking about in their levels of consciousness?
Well, that could be, yes. Again, going back to the formula, positive future equals positive timeline plus unity consciousness. And what that means, if one focuses on the positive timeline, is pretty much a given. That's the timeline that we're on. We have very, very little control over the timeline itself. However, over unity consciousness, those are waves of unity consciousness that are being broadcast into our hologram. And our minds are like radio receivers. And to the extent that our minds can open themselves to the field, to the morphic field that exists, and we pick up these broadcasts, then that's the extent that we can, you know, this is actually paradise on earth if we were in a state of unity consciousness of the full blast. Right? But to the extent that we can to the fullest extent possible, receive this unity consciousness, then we're experiencing the maximal of a positive future. People who are into duality consciousness of I win, you lose, well, they're turning this energy, it's actually turning against themselves, you know, where they're trying to, let me see how I can use these explosives, do some propaganda against this group and blow this group up. You know, which a large part of the world is into that activity right now that we call war or subversion or exploitation or something. That doesn't work out.
Right. And you mentioned a little bit ago the typology that was inadequate, that was too limiting for mapping intelligences based on whether or not these species were cooperating with the military-industrial extraterrestrial complex. And I do think that's interesting. What types of beings or species do we know are cooperating with the earthly governments?
Right now, just to give a rough ballpark figure, number one, the question you asked, the answer is highly classified. Number two, there are 150 known. This gets us into the subject of exophenotypes, which is defined as the physical characteristics of extraterrestrials based on their physical appearance. Mm-hmm. And right now, for example, probably many of your listeners are familiar with the exophenotype of the gray.
Right.
You know, we've seen them, pictures of them or representations of them. And the gray, there are over 150 known species of grays.
Wow.
And the gray, you see, each species in a way is how higher intelligence manifests itself in a particular form. In other words, we humans, earthling humans, are how intelligence manifests itself in a primate form.
Right. Okay.
And the gray species are, roughly speaking, how the plant kingdom manifests itself, how intelligence manifests itself in the plant form.
Yeah, I thought this was so interesting because you have in the book a dialogue where a gray alien from what was called the Exobiology Project in 2006, the gray says that they are nocturnal and they use chlorophyll as a vital nutrient source. And that's, I guess that's what we're getting at here.
Yeah, chlorophyll, and there's a lot of copper in there. So they're sort of like intelligent plants. I mean, you know, more or less, if people want to know, oh, well, why do they look so weird? Well, they're not insectoids. They're not intelligent bugs. They're not reptilian. They're not intelligent reptiles. They're not humanoids. They're the grays. Actually, you should call them plantoids.
Yeah, that's so weird. Before this book, I hadn't really thought of them that way. But I was also surprised to see like the subclasses. There's, you know, the standard ones we probably see in media, but there's also tall grays that have reproductive organs that when other ones, all those smaller ones don't seem to.
Yeah, there's over 150 categories. There are actually five main types. The standard grays are the most common type. They're about 4 to 4.5 feet tall. They have large bulbous heads, wraparound eyes, a slit-like mouth, small ears without earlobes, no visible nose. Their legs are shorter, jointed differently than one would expect in a human. Their arms often reach down to their knees. They can be gray, white, pale blue, pale green, pale orange, brown. Some have hands with fingers, some have claws, some have webs. The tall grays are 6 to 9 feet tall. They have a distinct nose. That is the tall nose grays. The tall grays are 6 to 7 feet tall. And they are basically taller versions of the standard grays. And some of them have reproductive organs. The short grays are 3.5 feet tall. Some of them can be aggressive. Some of the, for example, the Orion-based grays are said to be in alliance with some of the more aggressive and territorial reptilians, the Draco reptilians. Then there's some mini grays that are said to be 2 feet tall.
Wow.
Although some entities are great hyperdimensionals, some of them may be artificial cyborgs or probes. For example, there's some researchers that have stated and have found that there's a program called the Military Abduction Program, which is a program that human military intelligence has devised to mimic ET abductions, so that humans would think that they're being abducted by extraterrestrial species. And the intelligence agencies have this, the military agencies have this for a number of purposes. One is to try and get intelligence from people who have been abducted by the grays, because then they debrief them. And the other is to kind of give the extraterrestrials a reputation, because, you know, they can do certain things to them. And they have engineered what are called biological life forms or artificial cyborgs that look like grays that then they use to, quote, abduct these humans. This is the real shadow work.
Right, man, right. Jesus, we got a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
This is so interesting, man, and I'm glad that someone's out there profiling these creatures. And I had mentioned that a lot of this information came out of the Exobiology Project in 2006, and apparently there was also an interview with a reptilian who gave details about their species also. I was curious where this information came from. Do you know what type of project that was exactly?
Well, these are reports from the Exobiology Project that a very forward-thinking, the head of Exopolitics South Africa, Professor Manuel Lamelroy, then has compiled in an encyclopedia the exophenotypology of these based on a number of projects, one of which was the Exobiology Project. And there are a number of databases, including the Exobiology Project, that are ongoing. and there are other projects that he's just getting to now. There's a lot of data that exists that have not even yet been processed. So what I've done in this volume, kind of at the wholesale level, I've taken the fruit of the vineyards of what scholars like Professor Lameroy have done and then put them within a larger model, which is the dimensional ecology model, which shows how exophenotypes work within the model of the larger dimensional ecology.
Right on, yeah. Man, there's just, I get, it's so interesting because a lot of people are just in the dark about this subject, and then they hear that there's so much data that the people who are really working on it are having to sift through it, and they don't even have the time in the day. But Alfred, this has been fascinating stuff. I loved your book. I'm always checking out the interesting stuff on exopolitics.com. And
thank you.
You got it. Thank you. And would you like to tell the people a little bit more about the other stuff you have going on or what you're working on in the future before we go?
Sure, sure. I'd like to mention one project in particular, and that is the 9/11 War Crimes Tribunal. And this was initiated in June of 2012, and we've heard 20 witnesses. You can go to 911warcrimestribunal.org together with my fellow judge, Constance Fogel, a very preeminent lawyer here in Canada, and Professor Jim Fetzer of the University of Wisconsin. We're a tribunal of conscience. We'll be issuing an opinion, verdicts, and sentences later on this year for the war crimes and genocide involved in the false flag operation of September 11, 2001, and its aftermath, including the genocides in Afghanistan and Iraq, the genocidal war on terror, and all the damages caused by the New World Order's police state, domestic police state worldwide, under principles of restorative justice, whereas those who are culpable must now restore the world community of all the damage that they have caused. And they have deep pockets. So I just urge people to keep an eye out for that. Go to 911 warcrimestribunal.org. And if there are people that want to contribute evidence, you can write us at tribunal@911warcrimestribunal.org.
Okay, right on. That is definitely noble work. And thanks so much, man. I mean, this has been a great show, a real honor and a privilege. Keep doing what you do in this weird world and take care of yourself out there.
Thank you very much, Greg.
You got it. There we have it, people. Wow, far out stuff, that's for sure. Alfred has seen a lot of wild things running a website like Exopolitics, so what are you going to do, you know? You got to hear the man out. I thought it was pretty interesting stuff, hearing that there were over 150 varieties of grays, hearing about the different reptilian types, and then in the plus show, we go on to discuss the feline exophenotype, as well as how the archons fit in, insectoids, and the power struggle for Mars, the intricacies of interstellar space race wars with all these species, and the regional galactic governance authorities, how Alfred sees the Anunnaki fitting into the puzzle, what's the deal with over 100 synthetic quantum environments that the shadowy government has found on the Earth, and above the Earth, and in the Earth, and elsewhere that the Greys have made, some of the secret government deals, Nixon's interactions with aliens, Alfred's breakdown of HARP and the chemtrail campaigns that are working together. Interesting stuff, man. So it is a great extended show. Consider signing up if you haven't already. It's a small $5 tip, less than you'd give your wait staff, and it's what my life depends on, this little arrangement between you and I, so no pressure. And with that said, I'm going to get going. Next week should be a good show, too. We're swinging back hard into the world of analyzing the depths of symbolism in Hollywood, a world that's near and dear to this humble host's heart, probably because I'm just as big a victim of the Hollywood machine as anyone, goddammit. I love movies. I watch a lot of shitty TV. I'm a product of the Sixth Society. Maybe a black sheep, but as much as I hate it, it is what I know. I'm like a battered woman who just can't leave, repeating, he hits me because he loves me. That is my relationship with this American machine sometimes. And I'm sure all of us are attached to one harmful aspect of this culture or another. It's only natural with the imprinting that goes on in the early years of our life. Nobody's perfect. But if we're aiming for perfection and we land somewhere around pretty good, well, fucking A, I guess I'll take it. So be good people, but not too good. That's it for me this week. Your move, exophenotypes of the great beyond. Your fucking move.
Man is born, man lives, man dies. And it's all vanity. And that's about the way it is in the merry-go-round. You get on. You go around. Standing in the saddle. Tried thrills. He said, I gave myself to enjoy pleasure. What are teenagers doing today? They're trying every thrill there is in the books. We got colored TV, but it still isn't satisfying. We'll be right back.